Are you looking to give your immune system a boost? This is Dr. Ronald Hoppen with a natural solution from Future Farm Botanicals, liquid wild oil of oregano with rosemary extract and natural honey flavor. Future Farm's wild oil of oregano supports a variety of health benefits, including antimicrobial effects, as well as supporting the immune system. Plus, Future Farm is the first ever to formulate wild oil of oregano with rosemary. Rosemary aids circulation, helps alleviate muscle pain, improves memory, and also gives your immune system a boost. The natural honey flavor enhances the taste while still giving you all of the benefits. Future Farm sources this product from the Mediterranean and produces it in the United States. For more information and to order, call 888-841-7216, 888-841-7216, or go to myfuturefarm.com/Hoffman. That's future, P-H-A-R-M, myfuturefarm.com/Hoffman. Wild oil of oregano is all natural, science-based, and works without adverse side effects. MyFutureFarm.com/Hoffman. Welcome back to today's Intelligent Medicine Podcast. I'm your host, Dr. Ronald Hoffman. We're sharing the exciting news that there's a new organization, the American Nutrition Association, that seeks to improve Americans' health. With us is co-founder and director of nutrition science and education at ANA, Corinne Bush. Corinne is a practicing nutritionist. She's also, since she's director of nutrition science and education over there at ANA, she's also the person who cooks up much of the speaking platform of the ANA meeting. So what's in store for us come next fall in Chicago? Can you disclose? I mean, is it embargoed information?
Of course. No, not at all. Not embargoed. So I think it's going to be like another blockbuster conference. And really, what we are going to do is kind of pull the curtain back on how personalized nutrition is practiced. So we're going to take a look at various disease states and body systems through the lens of personalized nutrition. And by that, I mean, what assessments would be done for a certain condition? How would that then, how would we layer our interventions towards that individual? So how does one really practice personalized nutrition? And so I'm really excited about that. Another big component is, what is wrong with nutrition research in America? Why is nutrition research so confusing? What's missing? Yeah. Where are the gaps, and how can we actually drive personalized nutrition research?
Right, and that's really a source of confusion to the public, because they read this report and that report, and the reports contradict one another. And the reports that say that fat is bad for you, and then fat is good for you, and cholesterol has been now exonerated, and even recently a big study, and you're familiar with it, I think it was in the Annals of Nutrition. I'm sorry, the Annals of Medicine, looked at the research showing that meat is a driver of mortality and cardiovascular death and even cancer death. And it said that, if you do the right statistical analysis, the effect is negligible. So, our hallowed views about, a lot of people, they come to see us and they say, well, I try to limit my intake of red meat. Well, science on that, a little dubious at times.
For sure. And again, it all comes back to the biochemical individuality and how research studies are conducted on large groups. And so often that, anything meaningful is washed out by that. And so, I think of you're very familiar with the journal Cell and the import of glycemic response in people, right? So, yes. 40 people can have a sweet potato and they'll have 40 different glycemic responses to that.
I love that study. You can buy books that say, the GI diet, it just shows you which foods you should eat because they supposedly release their carbs more slowly. And then I think it was Israeli researchers who did this work initially.
Yes.
They determined that it's very individual. So I don't know about you, but I have some patients doing continuous glucose monitors to assess, and they're not diabetic, but they, they have issues related to insulin resistance and, weight gain susceptibility, and which foods are the culprits. It may be very individual. They have to test each food and see how their blood sugar responds. So, that's an example of where big studies might miss an individual response. You know, we put a lot of faith in randomized controlled trials that comprise hundreds and thousands of individuals, and yet the individual is lost. So personalized nutrition suffers at the hands of these big meta-analyses and RCTs.
Mm-hmm. Yeah. Another thing I could point to is often when we do nutrient studies, we give a whole group of people X amount of a vitamin or mineral, but we haven't tested them first to see what their status is, right? So some people are deficient, some are probably overly sufficient. And again, the result then does not, you know, there's not a result that's significant or meaningful. So if we did nutrient research starting with the individual's baseline level and then brought them to a target, we'd see very different results, most likely.
Can you share with us, you know, some of the people who were on the board and, you know, among the founders and, you know, sort of the brain trust of ANA? Because you know, many of whom I've interviewed here as guests on Intelligent Medicine, but really some of the very, very top people in the field of nutrition. David Perlmutter, I notice, is on that board. Jeffrey Bland. Dr. Jeff Blumberg, you know, what's the caliber of individuals who are involved with us?
Oh, very esteemed people that I find myself, you know, pinching myself to be in the company of the group that makes up our leadership, including you. So, yes, David Perlmutter, Jeff Bland, but also some of the real pioneers. I'm thinking of Dr. George Brewer and his work on copper, and Dr. Ananda Prasad and his work on zinc. So
right.
He's like the
godfather of zinc research.
Yeah. Right, yes. We have Dr. Stan Dudrick, who pioneered the use of enteral feeding.
Right.
And so we have just a stellar group of people who have really brought nutrition to the, you know, to the center of where it is now.
And Professor Emeritus of this organization is one of the original founders. She's since deceased, Mildred Selig, who's considered really one of the foremost pioneers of magnesium research. I think magnesium was overlooked until the work of Mildred Selig, who pointed out its cruciality in such a wide variety of disease processes. You know, magnesium deficiency is rampant in this country because of you know, processed foods that we eat. And she really shined a bright light on magnesium. I mean, I learned so much from her in the very early days when I was first involved in this movement in the 1970s and 1980s as a young student, and then as a medical student and a doctor. So, you know, it's got a really great lineage. That was the predecessor of ANA, which is the American College of Nutrition, which has now been folded into the organization. So is there also... you know, frankly, you know, one critique of this is that this is kind of luxury medicine. I mean, people go to, you know, fancy offices and see people, and sometimes it's not covered by insurance. They expend, you know, their discretionary dollars for nutrition advice. But, you know, many of these people are well-heeled individuals who are nutritionally oriented. They're already, you know, exercising, taking vitamins, and eating pretty well. Is this a elitist? Or are we doing anything within the structure of ANA to get the word out to underserved populations whose diets, unfortunately, can be abysmal?
Oh, I'm so glad you said that, because one of our bedrock values is that nutrition is for everyone. And we have this firmly in our sights because we know that despite this powerful role that nutrition has in health, it's just totally de-emphasized in policy. And we have made some really great strides over the years to moving nutrition into the core of healthcare. And I think about an example would be when we work with the Centers for Medicare and Medicaid to actually define the term nutrition professional and the parameters of that term, because it's all about the language, right? And so we were able to insert our language into that Medicare ruling, and thus insurance reimbursement is much more readily available, because if Medicare says this individual is equipped to take Medicare then the private insurers often go along with that too. So that's one example. Another is in hospitals, we also were able to, it was another Medicare ruling on who can order diets in hospitals. So we don't often think of personalized nutritionists in hospitals, but that's our vision, that we expand into the healthcare system. And it's only by doing that that we're going to break that, you know, bond of elitism that I think is, you know, that's a very fair thing to say, and that we definitely need to be working in the ways that I said and continuing to expand our work.
And another initiative that I'm excited about is that ANA is developing sort of teaching modules for hospitals and medical schools and training organizations for health professionals, because, you know, in some cases, you know, maybe they'd like to have a nutrition component, but they just don't have the expertise, the personnel, or the money to construct a curriculum from scratch. And by developing a curriculum that's kind of a turnkey operation, they can just say, okay, great, you know, let's, you know, we'll just fold this into our existing training program. We can sort of amplify the training outreach of ANA.
Definitely. And we believe in that kind of outreach and connection and collaboration. So we are working and have worked. I mean, this is over the years, we've had various initiatives in universities and in medical schools to ensure just that we have physicians and other healthcare practitioners trained as part of their own curricula to insert that into their education.
So an important question is, you know, where's the money for this initiative coming from? Because it's not government funded, it's not taxpayer funded. You do accept industry contributions, but you can't get the big players to dial in. You're not getting contributions from General Foods, Nestle's, you know, some of these big entities, because, you know, some of our messaging is, you know, directly in contradiction with the kinds of foods that they're offering. So what's the financial basis for this?
Yeah, I was just noodling around on the website and I hadn't seen this before. So as it stands now, about 60% of our funding comes from philanthropy. And that's so important, because these are individuals that and foundations that really understand the mission and are, you know, really wanting to support the work that we do. So that's wonderful. So that's about 60% come from philanthropic contributions, and then about 30% from our programs. So we have our programs, we have our conferences, we have our webinars, we have our certified nutrition specialist certification. We also have the ketogenic specialist certification that's been really popular, and I can say a few words about that.
Yeah, please do, because people want to learn about the ketogenic diet, and I think that's a good proficiency for a lot of our, you know, we do have a lot of health practitioners who listen to this program, and they, you know, they're interested in the ketogenic diet, but they, you know, they haven't had real professional training in administering the ketogenic diet. It's not something to be undertaken lightly. So ANA offers professional training in and certification in the ketogenic diet?
Yes, we have the certified ketogenic specialist designation. And that, you know, what we say about that, because this is, it's individualized, right? And so a ketogenic diet, when properly applied, can transform health. It's not for everyone. And so that's part of the training is how does the nutritionist ascertain if it's the proper intervention for an individual? And then how do you put that into
right.
play
and
in the best way for that person?
Exactly.
Yeah,
right.
Yeah. Mm-hmm.
Yeah.
So, and so that's about 30% of our funding, and then 10% from our corporate relationships.
Okay.
So that's the breakdown.
Well, this is kind of a crappy time of year to ask for money, but most people have shot their wad after Christmas and New Year's, you know, at the end of the tax year. But if you're considering making a philanthropic contribution that's going to make a huge impact on the health of Americans, consider the ANA. You know, the website is what, ANA?
TheANA.org.
TheANA.org.
Yes.
Because if you go to the ANA, you get the American Nursing Association, so you got to be careful. They don't need more money. They're
all right. Yes, it's TheANA.org.
Okay, great.
Yeah.
All right. So there has been, this is an area of conflict, and it's a political issue, and that is that there's some people who are extremely proficient in the field of nutrition. You know, I don't know what your training was as an MS, but you're a Master of Science in Nutrition. You also achieved the CNS certificate. You're one of the most gifted nutritionists in the country, so knowledgeable that, you know, it would be really a treat to be your patient. But in certain states, it's illegal for you to practice because you don't have two letters after your name, RD, Registered Dietitian. Can you describe the dimensions of that problem and how ANA is fighting to achieve equity on that issue?
Sure. Well, first off, let me say that, you know, we number among our certificates many registered dietitians. So many registered dietitians do go on to achieve the Certified Nutrition Specialist credential.
Training, they're, you know.
Yeah, recognizing that personalized nutrition is the hallmark of our credential. And so we have been up against the dietetics profession over the years, and we have very successfully, actually now we sit at the table with them. It was not like that in the beginning where mm-hmm. we were
it was a little more
of an adversarial, yeah, right. an adversarial relationship. But now we have been able to be at the table because they know that we belong there, and they just have not been able to, you know, not been able to pass laws that exclude us. And mm-hmm. so we're now accepted in 36 states, and in the time that I've been involved on the ANA board, I believe that we have changed legislation in 16 or 17 states. So, you know, it's a certification that really can't be discounted and won't be.
Right. And it's not a fly-by-night process because you're going through the most rigorous national accreditation process. I know because being involved in the exam committee, we're subject to so many audits and so many reviews to make sure that our exam is fair and equitable conforms to standards for national qualifying exams. So, you know, it's the real deal.
Yeah, it's been around since 1993. And it is a certification that has a third-party recognition, which, you know, there are many acronyms out there, aren't there, for nutritionists, but not many. In fact, I think there are only two, and ours is one of them, that has what's called NOCA certification. This is the National Certifying Body of Certification. So they're a third-party group that really looks closely at us to ensure that our certification is ironclad, and we're very proud of it. We've been around since 1993.
Right. And, you know, and I will say, having been involved with that certification process since 1993, since its inception, tremendous progress because it was, you know, writing exam questions is a real art form. And, you know, the level of sophistication, the way that we put together exams now in 2020 is so far and away superior, fairer, more sophisticated and less biased than it was when we were first putting together exam questions. So, fortunately, I passed in spite of the relatively primitive nature of the exam then. I mean, it was a good exam, but it's even better now. And so what I would urge is if health professionals are listening to this, put yourself to the test. You know, maybe you think, you know, you're an expert nutritionist, but bone up on nutrition principles look at some of the recommendations for study that are put out by the BCNS, the Board for Certifying Nutrition Specialists, and study for the exam. Sit for it. You know, subject yourself to the rigor and the discipline of passing that proficiency hurdle. And I think you'll find it a very, very useful exercise, and I think it's going to really solidify your credentials as a nutrition specialist. You know, whatever your field is, so you're an MD, you're a DO, you're a chiropractor, you're a nurse, you're a master's in nutrition. You know, if I missed a naturopath, a lot of naturopaths taking the exam.
That's yes. interesting.
Because they get a lot of nutrition training, but they may want to get, some advanced nutrition training through ANA.
Well, and it's true that just as with nutritionists, I think it's even more of an issue across the United States with naturopathic licensure. So naturopaths have a beautiful foundation in nutrition for sure, but if they get the CNS credential, then they are able to be licensable as a nutritionist in states where they cannot be licensed as a naturopath.
That's very true, yeah. Because unfortunately, New York lags. This will change eventually, but New York, my state, lags in recognizing naturopathic physicians. But if they obtain the CNS credential, that they can practice, although they can't get a prescription pad, they can't prescribe medications as they can in some states where their scope of practice is very, very liberal. They can sit down with patients, they can plan nutrition programs, diet programs, and also prescribe appropriate supplements once they've achieved the CNS. And they're legal, and it's not like, something where they have to look over their shoulder and say, my choker chain pulled because I'm practicing without proper licensure. So that's a good thing for naturopaths to undertake. What else would we like to cover? Where are we going in 2020? We got a big conference in Chicago. That's something to plan for in November. There's the ketogenic webinar. It's a webinar. It's learning. Remote.
It's an online learning experience. Right. Yes, but it's a fully there's an exam and it's a fully certified proposition. One thing I'd love to talk about is our paper that is just now to be published on the definition of personalized nutrition.
Great.
And it is an open access article that is being published in the print copy of the Journal of the American College of Nutrition this January, but it's available online right now.
And I'm going to put that up in my newsletter. Yeah, that's going to be in an upcoming newsletter article. But give us the information. Mm.
Well, just as I said earlier, it's all about the language that we use. And so what we recognize that there was not a consensus definition of personalized nutrition that had broad acceptance across the personalized nutrition ecosystem. So what we did is we convened a group of personalized nutrition experts, and I was one of the authors, to define personalized nutrition. And it's a real simple definition, but I think it says it all, in that it's a field that leverages human individuality to drive nutrition strategies that prevent, manage, and treat disease and optimize health. So that's the synopsis definition. So gaining the kind of consensus that this represents really, I think, allows us to take a critical step to embed it in our healthcare system, just as I spoke about with the CMS issues. This is a first step toward that.
And I think that with all buried in that language is the concept that we can use nutrition not just as a preventive tool, like stay lean, exercise, et cetera, eat a healthy diet, blah, 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 but that we can use targeted personalized nutrition not just certainly to prevent disease, that's a given, but also the therapeutic application of PN, personalized nutrition, can target specific diseases. And it's now evidence-based with as varied conditions as cancer, gastrointestinal disorders like ulcerative colitis and irritable bowel syndrome, brain disorders. We now know that so much can be done via a nutritional approach for slowing the progression of neurodegenerative diseases, even if they've already begun, that this is really the dawning of a new era in the recognition that this tool should be really on a side by side with medications and high tech interventions. I think that's really where this is going.
Amen.
Yeah. So, to conclude, the ANA is going to be making a big difference in the coming decade as we launch a new decade in 2020, and you'll be hearing more about it. So I want to thank you very much, Corinne Bush, for joining us, and all the best to you as you continue in the busy job of Director of Nutrition Science and Education. I know putting together those speakers and coordinating the offerings of A&A is quite a challenge. It's a job that I once held with another organization, the American College for Advancement in Medicine. I was program director in.
Right.
Tough job.
Yeah. But it's a pleasure and a passion, and when we do things that we're passionate about, it's not work.
It's a lot of fun. Great. So all the best to you in the coming year. Thanks for joining us. And the website, once again, is theana.org, correct?
Correct. Thank you for having me.
My pleasure. I'm Dr. Ronald Hoffman, and this is the Intelligent Medicine Podcast. Hi, this is Dr. Ronald Hoffman. Tending to your cardiovascular health requires much more than simply lowering your cholesterol. Maintaining heart health requires a combination of diet and lifestyle choices, along with a smart regimen of supplementation. That's why I've created the Intelligent Medicine Heart Health Protocol, my personal supplement recommendations to reduce your heart risk. Just go to DearHoffmanStore.com for details. And for a limited time, you'll get free shipping on all of your store orders. For more details, just go to DearHoffmanStore.com. That's DearHoffmanStore.com.